You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great week, and I have a fantastic episode for you today. I'm so excited to have Christine Brown from Sister Wives. But first, I have to ask you, are you watching Real Housewives of Salt Lake City? Because I have been, and it's been pretty painful. We are three seasons into the show, and I still have no idea who the women are that live in the city. Each franchise should essentially tell the different stories of the women that live there, and they don't even have one Mormon influencer. Explain this to me. Then you have Jen Shah, who suffocates every episode. Every time she's on screen, she is so over the top, it's nauseating. And especially when you keep in mind all the victims in her wake and the fact that she's going to go to prison soon. And she's telling everybody that she's innocent, which makes it worse. So in this last episode, you basically have three women jonesing for a spot on the show. And there's nothing more annoying to somebody who watches a Real Housewives show than the other people in the periphery trying to get every opportunity they can to become television stars like their acquaintances, that of which are featured on the show. So in this case, you have a woman who very early into the season threw an over-the-top party, not for Jen Shah, but for her husband, which already is weird. You're throwing an over-the-top birthday party for someone's husband. Also, for a husband who is a lawyer by trade and seems to have no idea that his wife was committing crimes, it's a lot to unpack. So she spent $15,000 of her own money, which is a dumb move. She was trying desperately, obviously, to make a name for herself and get a spot on the show. She spends $15,000, and now here she is, weeks later. She sets up an opportunity for all of them to go on a trip to San Diego because Jen Shah can't leave the country. And because she insists on having the biggest room since she set up the trip, because obviously she's watched every single Real Housewives episode that's ever been created. And that's a trope, that they have a trip and the person that scheduled it gets to have the biggest room. Well, Jen Shah believes that she's the center of the universe. So she's angered by a woman who's not even a featured cast member, not even a friend yet, and takes a glass of champagne and dumps it on her head, which is completely humiliating and demeaning. And they all just kind of stand there and eat it. They're like, well, she's got seniority. She could do whatever she wants. And the woman who has this drink dumped on her head says, I'm going to send you an invoice for the $15,000 I spent on your husband's party. That's where you went wrong, my friend. Why did you spend even a dime to get yourself a spot on the show, right? This is the problem with Real Housewives now, is that too many people become savvy to the show. They try to weasel their way onto the show. They're not willing to show their authentic selves. And the women that have been on the show forever are basically performing to the character that they believe that they are most loved to be on social media. So that's my problem right now with Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Now, this episode again, as I mentioned, features Christine Brown from TLC's Sister Wives. I've been working on this interview for years. I couldn't tell you how excited I was this week to get a chance to talk to her. For those that are unfamiliar with Sister Wives, if they haven't listened to my review with Steve Stoff, they haven't found themselves flipping through channels and being mesmerized by a family with 18 children and four wives, here's what you need to know. Cody Brown is the father. He's the patriarch. There are four wives. There's Mary, Janelle, Christine, and Robin. Mary and Cody were wed in 1990. She was raised in a polygamous family. She was introduced to Cody by her sister. So they get legally married, and then he gets spiritually married to Janelle. This is where it gets crazy. Okay, so Janelle and Cody start their marriage in 1993. Janelle was briefly married to Mary's brother, and they only lived together for 6 months. Through their separation, Janelle said that she remained close to Adam's family, including Mary. She said the first time that she met Mary's new suitor, Cody, the strangest feeling washed over her, and in the middle of a horrible divorce, she had no idea how to handle the quote-unquote sensation that Cody's entrance conjured in her. Then her late mother married Cody's late father, who was also a polygamist, and they're buried next to each other. So neither Cheryl, her mother, nor Janelle were raised in polygamist households. Then Christine joins Cody's plural marriage in 1994. She grew up in a polygamous family. And then Robin joins the family in 2010, and she and Cody were legally married in 2014. She was previously married and had three children together. So Mary so graciously agrees to divorce Cody so that they could be included in their insurance. So incorporating Robin into this family has been a major, major storyline in this show, because people that are in monogamous relationships are watching the show thinking, how in God's name is this guy able to navigate having all these wives and spending time with all of these children, and then the nuances of the relationship between each wife to one another? As you can imagine, it's been a shit show over 17 seasons. So during COVID, basically the last two or three seasons, we have watched Cody essentially use this as an opportunity to isolate himself in the home that he shares with Robin and spends time essentially with only those children, which of course the other kids are like, what's up, dad? And the other wives are like, really? You have a favorite and you're making it that obvious? So it's been fascinating to watch over the last couple of seasons. Now this season, Christine has announced that she is leaving Cody, to the great elation of everyone who watches the show, because essentially over all these seasons, you see a woman that has no intimacy with her husband. Even seasons ago when they were celebrating their anniversary, he basically was annoyed that he had to spend any time with her. And she is lovely. She's funny. She's cool. She's got great kids. She's fun to be around. And you're like, you're an idiot, Cody. So she says she's leaving him, and he flips out because, you know, he's got this television show about polygamy, and his whole ego is wrapped around how all of these women are fighting for the opportunity to be around him. But as they've gotten older, they're kind of like, I don't like you, and they don't want to spend time with him. But they do grow frustrated because he has zero interest in the older children, and I'm going to tell you why. Because older children have opinions. Older children who are not being raised around polygamous families are going to choose monogamy and education and live in the normal free world, the democratic world, a world that is not run by a patriarchy. And therefore, he chooses to be around younger kids because then he can force his opinions on them. It has been fascinating to watch. And I'm just telling you, every episode, you're like, this woman, Christine, has the patience of a saint. The way that she has handled herself throughout this, because when he's arguing with her, he talks in a word salad. And truthfully, over time, no one really knows what this guy does for a living. They all have to throw all of their money into a pot and share it. So when Robin joins the family, they're paying off her debts. Now they've got this big plot of land in Arizona and it's subdivided. And Christine's like, I'm out, you guys. I don't want to be here. I'm not into this. And then one wife is upset because she's leaving. The other wife is upset because she says divorce is really hard. And all the kids are so happy for Christine, and so are all of us. So Again, I've been working on this interview for years. I've been so excited to talk to her. The only stipulation was I was not allowed to ask her about her individual relationships with the other wives. However, I did ask her about Janelle. I think that a lot of her answers are going to be very eye-opening for you. And I love what she says at the end of the interview when I ask her for her advice for anybody who finds themselves in a similar situation, whether they want to move into a new chapter of their life, leave someone in a bad marriage. I just think she is such a great person to look to right now for anybody who finds themselves in a similar life situation. And by the way, she's super funny. She's going to have a great second chapter in life. And I'm just hoping that she dates a ton of guys, she meets a wonderful man, and she gets all of the love and affection that she has not received for the last 26 years. So here is my interview with Christine Brown from Sister Wives. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Christine Brown, first of all, the people are freaking out. I have to first ask you, do you right now feel the love and support of so many people in this moment of your life? You are like the most popular person right now in reality television. Right now, the most popular person.
Well, you're extremely overwhelming and kind. Thank you. It's been overwhelmingly incredible. I never knew that people would feel empowered by my decision, kind of a thing. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I just wanted to be able to leave with grace. And I knew my kids would see everything that I did. So I was like, I'm just going to do everything with grace as much as possible, stand up for myself, but do it in a way that's honorable for me and true to myself, you know? And I'm just authentically me. And if I could get any message out, it would just be authentically you. That's it. Just be authentic.
I really think that you're representing so many people who've decided to take back their own power in their own life, move into a new chapter, and to pursue their own happiness. Could you even imagine this like a couple years ago that you would be this representation of like a woman taking back their own power?
No, that never even occurred to me. All it was do I go public with this story? And with me leaving, you know, but I was honest for so many years. So I thought I might as well. No, I never dreamed that it would help anybody. And if that, isn't that everybody's goal? You know, if we can just at least help a few people, that's like the vision. Mm-hmm. And I've been overwhelmed and blown away, honestly, by the amount of people that this has helped. And it's, if anything more, I just want to be a better person all the time because of it. It's just been so amazing.
Well, first, let's just go back to the beginning. You were born into polygamy. So tell me about your experience growing up in a large family with multiple moms.
I had an idyllic childhood. It was awesome. I loved it. I had two moms and they were like incredible. And I remember one point I realized that my mom was super cool and she would like catch on to the trends, but always after the fact. And I realized my other mom was super, super cool. So I started asking my other mom for things instead and for like, you know, advice and things like that. And it was just fun to have both moms that I could kind of work with. I loved it. It was a wonderful, wonderful childhood. And I always thought that polygamy was just like the bomb. And all I ever wanted to live was polygamy because I saw how incredibly awesome it was, especially for my grandmas. My grandmas were really cool.
And did you live in a rural area? And how many siblings do you have in total?
I have 10 siblings between my two moms. No, not really rural. In fact, it's only about 5 miles away from where I live right now. Mm-hmm. So it's got a little bit of city. We could walk to school. We could walk to the store. We could, you know, whatever. Yeah, no, not too rural.
So you've said before that you always envision yourself as the third wife. So I wanted to ask you about that. Why did that number feel the best for you?
It seemed like the first wife had so much freaking work and had to like help that little boy grow up. And I was not interested in that. And then the second wife was like, gosh, it seemed like it would be super difficult emotionally for her to come like in between just like a marriage kind of a thing, you know, and it would be like, she would be breaking the ice. And I'm like, ooh, don't sign me up for that. It just seemed like the third wife was the easiest route. And so I was like, I'll just go in after all that hard work is done, just go in and sail on through.
And because you grew up with these two wives that seemed, you know, really happy, and I'm assuming they were happy because you had this really great childhood, did you just envision that it would be the same for you?
My mom left when I was 19. And when she left, that's actually when I thought, okay, if she's left, is this really something that I want for me? Because she obviously wasn't happy in it. So do I really want to live polygamy? Is it what I wanted to do? And I prayed and just definitely got a testimony, a belief that this was something that I wanted to do, that I needed to do. And then I met Cody as well. And we just became friends really, really fast. So I was like, okay, we could go ahead. And I definitely believe the plural marriage was the way to go. And
Was Cody saying, this is a life that I'd really like for you to experience with me? Or was it like you were just waiting because of your family of origin, you were just waiting for this sign that the person that was meant to be would come along?
So, I mean, there were other guys that were interested in too. Like in our church, it's kind of like we see a guy who we think is super cool and treats his family well and treats his wives well and his children well. And it's kind of like, oh, that would be, you know, super interesting. And yeah, I'll go ahead and pursue that. But Cody and I, we just hit it off. We just became friends and we were friends for a long time. And it's not like he was, I asked him, I think, you know, out of all the guys I know, I think you should be the one that I should marry. And he took that as totally a proposal. And, it was just more like, it just seemed like it needed to happen. Like we were really good friends and we'd been friends for 3 years and different people had come and gone and things like that. And we were still there. So it was more like, it just seemed like it made sense.
Was there a romantic connection now that you look back?
To me, yes. Like I would still say to me, yes. I didn't know that Cody didn't feel like it was a romantic connection until he said so, 2 years ago? So for me, it was romantic. For me, it was everything that I wanted. And he was just the coolest, bravest like guy I knew. So to me, it was.
I feel like I remember an episode very early on to the show where you were celebrating your anniversary. And it felt like you got a window into how his time had to be separated. And it almost felt like it was a chore to him to celebrate the anniversary. I don't even know if you look back at all old episodes, but do you kind of feel like you look back now and sort of like the puzzle pieces are kind of fitting together now?
Yeah. And actually that was an empowering moment, as hard as it was.
Good for you.
Well, it was kind of hard at first when he said, you know, I wasn't really attracted to him. I kind of look back and I'm like, I can see where you worked here and here and here and here and here and here. Well, you know what? If this has been happening for this long, then I'm done. It's over. I'm not going to keep pretending, and I'm not going to keep doing this. If you really haven't been attracted to me, and if you really didn't really want a relationship with me, and you didn't really want to spend time with me, it was almost like this burden that got lifted. And I was like, all right, then it's time to move on.
And then as a third wife, is there this agreement that you take the heavier burden in terms of raising the children? Because it feels like in your family, you were like super mom.
No, nothing about third wife, nothing about roles. There's not a first wife, second wife, third wife, fourth wife, kind of a role situation. It's just more of, I think, what people want. And to me, being a mom was the greatest honor of my life. It is the greatest honor of my life to be a mom. I think it's an absolute blessing every day. And I feel so, 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 so grateful that I'm a mom.
We can see that you enjoy the role of mom. And we can see the respect that all the other kids have for you and how important you are in their lives. What were some of the ways that your feelings about polygamy kind of changed over the years? Was there any sort of like milestones that your opinion started to sway?
Yeah, a lot of little ones, I would say, at first. Without it getting too deep into doctrine or anything like that, I just looked at the society as a whole as being extremely fear-based. And I realized I was really living in fear. And to me, it just seemed like, not that it tries to be judgmental, but I felt like it was a little bit judgmental and a little bit fear-based for me, where I was. So I think for other people, like I have family that are still in our church, and they're wonderful and fabulous, and I don't consider them like fear-based people, but it seemed like we were just taught fear-based. And then really, so hard to know what to go into. But basically, I just knew that polygamy wasn't right for me anymore. I just remember this day. I was in Flagstaff sitting on my balcony, and I had this gorgeous view, super beautiful. And I remember realizing, here I am in this beautiful view, and I'm not really happy. And I'm like, God, what's up with this? You know, seriously, I figure that he was a parent like me. And really, I just want my kids to be happy. And I figured he just wanted me to be happy. And it was like, you know, dude, I'm not happy anymore. This isn't working for me. Do I really have to keep living polygamy? And he's like, no, I just want you to be happy. That's all it is to it. I almost feel like, you know, he's going to treat me like I would treat my kids. And it's like, I want you happy. This isn't working for you anymore. It worked for you great. It worked for you great. You are who you are today because of polygamy, because of the choices you made, and it's made you stronger, and you should be super grateful for that. Now just go on and move forward. You could have just moved forward now and lived your life. It was awesome. It was a great moment. I'll always remember sitting there on that balcony, just absorbing God's love for my next chapter.
Do you feel like as the kids have grown up too, that maybe your feelings about how the church is best represents women or women fit into the church has changed too?
I think that women should feel like they are goddesses and they are powerful. I think every woman should feel like they're a goddess and powerful. And if they're living in a life where they don't feel like they are, then they should change that.
When we watch the show, it feels like you guys move all the time.
No kidding.
I mean, and you have so much stuff, and I sometimes worry that you're a little bit of a hoarder and we need to get an intervention from another A&E show. Why so much moving?
You know, I don't know what it was, but it seemed like just always looking for the next best thing, maybe. I would love to just say it's all on Cody, but I don't think it is. I think it was kind of looking for the next best thing and next best thing, maybe. Maybe we just didn't feel like home or settling or anything like that. But I can tell you, the first night that I was here in my house, it finally felt like home.
Because it was your space. I feel like that was the shift too, is that then, like that first time you went to your house and you said, like, I don't have to ask anybody for permission. Everything, the way I decorate, the way that this home is set up is all about me. There must have felt tremendous freedom in that.
It was amazing. And I hope that for every woman out there, that they get to just live life for them and make the choices that they want to make. It's powerful and it's strong and it feels absolutely amazing.
So the first time you come to him and you're like, I'm having some trepidation about, you know, the way our marriage is. How far back would that go?
I definitely started feeling like that in Vegas. Like we were all cul-de-sac all together. So once we moved into the cul-de-sac, I thought that we'd see each other more. I thought that we would do things more together. I certainly thought that we'd see Cody more because he's right there, you know, all the time. But early on, it just seemed like, he just didn't want to come over and he just wasn't there and he wasn't around. And I was like, I started talking to him then and being frustrated. And I remember he'd come over and it was almost like you have to decide when you see him one out of every 3 or 4 days, and it's only for like 15 minutes. Do you want to fight? Do you want to go, you know, this isn't working for me. This is not working. You're not here often enough, blah, blah, blah. Do you want to have that fight or do you want to have a good time? So it's always this balance, whether do I bring it up and discuss it? And we figured out and we tried therapy. We tried conversations. We tried counseling. We did group sessions. You name it. We tried it. We tried it. I gave my all 100%. And it got to the point where sometimes I would just dread it when I knew he was coming over. But then I also wouldn't say he was coming over. He would just pop on by. So I was frustrated that he was there because he just popped on by. And it's like, you upset everything. You've upset it. And then here I am complaining that he's over. You know, you can see that it was just a bad cycle. It was such a bad cycle. Sometimes it would be fine. It seems like there was always this underlying tension of this just isn't working. It's just not. And it was starting in Vegas that it felt like that. And then we moved to Flagstaff and it was even more so because we were even more separated. And then I just started to be more independent anyway, which started to be pretty awesome.
And then also you're far away from your family and friends. So I would assume if you had been in Vegas or in Utah, you could go and spend time with them, kind of recharge your battery. But you're separated from them. And then we go through COVID. So there's isolation in that way too.
During COVID, the first couple of months, I felt extreme isolation. And then I thought, this isn't going to work for me because my kids that lived in Utah were like, when are we going to see you again? And then Maddie, North Carolina, she called me and asked me for some help. So I'm like, you know, this isn't going to work for me to just stay isolated, actually. So I read up on CDC guidelines all the time for everywhere that we went. And I went to see my kids anyway, and I went to go visit them anyway. And it became a choice that I wasn't, and this is the deal too. So I was raised with fear. It was a constant thing of my life. We were afraid of the whole outside world, and I didn't even realize it until I was 38 years old. And I was raised in fear, and I was raising my kids in fear. So 2 months into COVID, I realized I was just being fear-based, and I was just afraid. And I thought, you know, I'm just not going to be afraid of this. I'm going to do everything that I can to stay smart and to stay safe. But we're going to still live our life. So we did. And we took up kayaking. I have to tell you, kayaking is where it's at. It's outdoor COVID activity. You're in your kayak all by yourself, 6 feet apart from anybody. And we would kayak several times a week. We took up hiking. We just started living life to the fullest. I visited my kids. I just went. And I just realized that I wasn't going to let fear dictate me.
Does that perhaps have a part of Cody's paranoia maybe during that period of time, that it's such a part of your faith? So less about control, but more about adherence to faith.
I don't think that was a connection at all for Cody. In fact, I know that wasn't a connection at all for Cody. I don't think he associated that because at his core, I didn't really feel like he was a fear-based person when we were living in our religion. So I don't think that was even part of it. I just think that he became, I don't even want to say it, but just seemed extreme. If he really truly felt like he needed to be that particular and extreme about where he was. And I have friends that were just as extreme too. And we didn't see anybody that, you know, and everywhere I went, I would just pay attention to what they needed me to do. So everybody around me felt comfortable. So before Cody came over, we would get COVID tested and we would isolate and everything like that to make sure that he was comfortable when he came over as well. So we just did our best to insert ourselves in, make people feel comfortable at the same time.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I think so many women too, especially who are going through a divorce or have divorced, relate so much to how difficult it is to share custody when you're fighting with your spouse or your ex-spouse. And what does it feel like to look back at those scenes, or maybe even how you felt during the filming, where you're so frustrated because you want your ex to spend time with your children and you feel like they're not being seen and you're not being heard?
It was like a vicious cycle all the time, because for years I'd say, you know, your dad loves you. He loves you. He wanted to spend time with you. I would tell my kids that all the time, that he's going to come over. We're going to have a great time, blah, blah, blah. And after a while, they just stopped believing me. And I saw it in their eyes that they didn't believe me anymore. They didn't really feel like they had a great connection with him. And they'd see what he was like with other kids and how he was amazing. And he wasn't with them. And they were awkward around him and nervous. And it's tough, because all I want for my kids is to have a great relationship with their dad. Are you kidding me? I don't want to raise my kids with daddy issues. That's super, super sad. And I just also felt like Cody was just missing out on some seriously wicked, awesome kids. Mm-hmm. And he was missing out on knowing them, because they're phenomenal people. They're amazing and delightful. And he just doesn't know them and doesn't. It's sad for him too. So it's frustrating all around. I mean,
yeah.
You can only sit and wish for so long. You actually have to start making the steps necessary to change that dialogue, to change that situation. And I was just done wishing, because it wasn't changing anything. If he'd been an awesome dad, I'd still be there. Absolutely. If he was an awesome dad to my kids, if they knew he loved them, if he wanted to spend time with them, I'd stay. Yeah. But it just wasn't there.
You're such a good mom. You can so see it in those scenes, because you're doing everything in your power to be respectful of their relationship with him. Despite what you feel and what you've experienced, you're so respectful of that their relationship with their dad is separate. And I have to commend you on that, because some of those scenes, I'm screaming. I know everyone else is too. Like, even when you're leaving and there's all this chaos and feelings of he's angry and he's taking it out on you, and you just maintain your composure. Like, how are you able to do that? It's so unbelievable.
Box breathing. I just realized I already knew, like, I've been through some counseling to take care of it, hypnotherapy, to be completely honest. And just one of the things is, like, you could just put your feet firmly on the ground, and I would just take a deep breath. Not box breathe right there. That looks silly. But, and I would just take a deep breath and get grounded again. And then I would get in touch with my core again. And I'd say, okay, what do I want for my life? And what do I want for my children's life? It doesn't matter what he says. Doesn't matter. At my core, I am making the right choice for me and my children. And I would just tap into my core. Like, I could stand up and yell and scream, is that going to do anybody any good? No.
Right.
Nope. All I can do is just tap inside and move forward. So that's what I did. I just took a deep breath and thought, that's just really not me to respond by yelling and throwing a fit. You know, that's just not who I am. I'm not going to go out like that.
In terms of the faith, does Cody just serve as the leader of a family unit and their services that are held independently, or is there an overarching leader that kind of sets the doctrine? How does that work?
So we're not, I think as a family, so I don't want to speak for the whole family. Let's just say we stopped doing church services as an individual family in Vegas. We all attended a church together when we lived in our community in Lehigh. And then we moved to Vegas. We had church services in our home for a while. And then even that, it just seemed like it wasn't a thing anymore. And I remember in the car one day, we were traveling back from Utah all together, where we went to visit our friends, the Dargers, who live polygamy, actually about 20 minutes away from me. And we just ran a visit and we just had a conversation in the car and where everybody's at spiritually. And I just said, I'm done. I'm not going to be a member of the church anymore. I feel like it's too controlling for women. And I am a goddess and it's time to step up and be that person. And I just said it wasn't for me anymore. And everybody was kind of at a different place. So it's not like we all left at the same time. And I don't even know if Cody or Robin, maybe they would even go back to the church. I don't know. But it's not like he was never like an ecclesiastical authority or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And we chose him to be the leader of our family. And we chose him to be the head, but it's like we asked him to be that. It was, and he pulls out that line about being patriarchal, and I'm like,
oh, I know.
What is that? I didn't know that we were even doing that. That's new for me. But I mean, to me, it wasn't patriarchal like that. But I've got kids who were like, you definitely lived in a patriarchal society, and I'm like, I didn't think so. Ever. I didn't think that I did. And looking back, my kids are all like, yeah.
Oh my God. I love your kids, first of all.
I'm obsessed with them.
Do you feel like some of this like anger and bitterness is this fear that maybe if you're gone, that the show for Cody, maybe the show is not the same? Like, he's so attached to the show. There's this fear that if you're not part of it, that it might change or go away.
So reading his mind and getting into his mind is something that luckily I don't have to do anymore. And yay.
That's a good, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, I don't have to even try and figure out what that boy means, which is super awesome. At the very beginning, when I told him I was going to leave, he did say, you know, and all the different things that we talked about, he's like, well, you know, what about the show? And I'm like, look, I'm going to stay with the show as long as the show is running and as long as it's viable. And as long as this is what we're going to do, I'm not just going to get up and leave. And he was like, are you going to get up and take your toys? I'm like, no. And I'm like, look, we have a story to tell. And me leaving is part of that story now.
That's right.
I owe it to all of these amazing people who have supported us as a family through the years, realize that now we're going through a change. And now our family is going to look different. And it's a change, and all this is a change. So me getting up and leaving it just wouldn't be courteous to us. It wouldn't be courteous to our kids. It wouldn't be courteous to anybody who's been watching us, who cares, you know? And so, like, as long as there's still a show, of course, I'm definitely going to stay. And so that's why we traveled. Oh my gosh. I traveled back and forth to Flagstaff almost every other week for the last year to go back to film. And it was like, sometimes it was less than that. And it was for 3 or 4 days at a time, and truly did homeschool during that time. And then in January, February last year, she's like, Mom, I'm not learning anything. Let's go ahead and enroll me in public school. I'm like, okay, that means you're going to be straight into middle school and junior high. You want to do that? She's like, yeah, I need some friends. I'm like, okay, let's do it. So she's been thriving.
That's great.
Made it into the honor roll.
I'm not surprised.
Well, I'm so excited. She was homeschooled for a year. You never know what your kids know, you know?
Yeah.
And so she's, thank you.
What was the nanny doing?
So I never actually ever in Robin's house. I don't know.
We don't know.
Only about COVID. And it came because so many kids, like Janelle's kids, kept asking. They're like, what does the nanny do? Why is she able to be in the house all the time? Why is it she can go over, but we can't go over? And it was only all about COVID, right? And then after we, anyway, no one was asking. No one was directly asking. So I'm just that person.
Well, we're glad because we all wanted to know.
But, you know, I don't know.
We don't know. Any of the kids, of all of the kids, see themselves in a polygamous marriage?
Not my kids. No, my kids do not plan on living plural marriage. Neither do Janelle's kids. I don't know what Robin's kids are going to end up doing. My kids and Janelle's kids definitely don't see that polygamy is a lifestyle that they want. I think they saw what it was like for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my kids did. They're like, I would never want to do what you did or, you know, put a wife through what you went through. So no, not my thing. And I mean, we left the whole culture anyway. And when we moved to Vegas, so it's not like they were around people that lived polygamy either. It's like community. Mm-hmm. Change your community into a monogamous community. Most likely your kids are going to choose monogamy, which is awesome.
Awesome. Well, it also kind of seems like it just seemed like you were all ex-wives that lived in a cul-de-sac versus polygamous wives.
Just not say that. Let's just say we learned the value of independence.
Well,
in cul-de-sac.
We support that. What has your friendship with Janelle meant to you, especially during this time?
Oh, she's my best friend. She's awesome.
That's amazing.
She's so cool. She's amazing. Her kids and I have a fantastic relationship. They're just the loves of my life, you know? And her friendship is incredibly empowering. And I asked when we were in Vegas, and I was just done in Vegas. I remember asking her, I'm like, I need to leave. I don't want to be married to Cody anymore, and I can't. And she looked at me, she goes, until you can support yourself financially by yourself, you are not going to leave. I'm like, oh God, all right then. So she's just that person where she'll listen and listen and listen and be like, everything's fine. He's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes right down to it, she'll just be like, boom, shakalaka.
Yeah.
Every woman needs is a friend that is just supportive and kind of good. But when you need, you know, you need to have a different perspective, they don't mind just giving it to you. And Janelle's lovely that way. She's lovely. And she's a good balance to me where we balance each other well.
Are we going to get to see you date? I think everybody wants to see you dating and happy. I'm telling TLC right now, I want a spinoff of you dating. I don't know, Janelle dating, we want to see you out in the world dating. Is it going to happen?
Well, I don't know how much TLC is going to follow me dating, but I think dating is fabulous and it's wonderful. And there's just a lot of incredible men out there that
will swallow you up. And they will.
Thank you. I don't know. We'll have to see what TLC does and what they follow. I don't know. But I think that I look at my own life as my own life. And in my own life, yes, I'm going to date. Absolutely. And if TLC chooses to follow, that's, you know, I don't know. But I'm going to live my life for me, not for anybody else.
So my last question is this. What is your advice for someone right now who is perhaps in a relationship that they feel doesn't represent who they are or what they want anymore? What is your advice for them?
I talk to them like I talk to my kids. And I just say, I bet you already know what you're supposed to do. I bet you already know. You got to listen to your heart. Just tune into your heart. Know who you are as a person. Get your center. Find your center. Rise of the Guardians, that movie, Santa Claus is talking to Jack Frost and he's like, you must find your center. Find your center, figure out who you are, then start making decisions based on joy, not based on fear. Live based on joy and grab your life and go.
You're the best. I mean, everybody in the world is so supportive of you and so happy for you. Where can people follow you?
So I'm on Instagram, of course. That's always like my favorite. I'm and TikTok. I started to be on TikTok and I did a dance. It's ridiculous. I have a couple of Facebook groups. I have a Cooking with Christine Facebook group, or Cooking with Just Christine Facebook group. Then I have LuLaRoe is a clothing business. And then Plexus has been a business that has changed my life. Like life and happiness. Anyway, it's been an amazing adventure. Janelle and Maddie and I do it together. And it's been, I feel better at 50 than I ever felt at 40. It's insane. I have more energy and everything. And so it's just about living life to the fullest. And that's just what I'm doing, is embracing it.
Congratulations on everything that's headed your way. I really feel like this is the best next chapter of your life.
Thank you. I feel it too. I feel absolutely just blessed to live the life I have.
So continued success, and thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank my great guest, Christine, and make sure you click subscribe and leave a 5-star review. Join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. You've got to jump in it if you're not in it already. We talk about all the shows I'm watching in unscripted television, documentaries, reality shows, docuseries, what we're reading, what we're listening to. Jump in it. You can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Kate Casey, Instagram at Kate Casey CA. TikTok, it's Kate Casey. I'm on Cameo, Kate Casey. I've got bonus episodes, and I just riffed about Teresa Giudice, the TJ Holmes, and the Amy Robach affair. So listen to that. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. And then also, you got to get my must-watch list, which is available every Monday by going to katecasey.substack.com. It's in your inbox. It's easy for you to get access to. And it's a list every week of what to watch on unscripted television. Reality shows, documentaries, and docuseries. It will help you throughout the week on what to watch. I'm hoping that you have a fantastic weekend. And make sure you check back with me next week for more episodes.
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.